Hello, everyone, and welcome in to Scrambled Eggs here on Crack Sidewalks, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast. Joe McCann, Phil Bush with you. And, Phil, I guess this is going to be a mayo-free edition?
Yeah, I guess we will have to do without condiment jokes for this for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I guess the Todd Mayo drinking game is over.
Yes.
We'll probably still hear it, that he's O.J. Mayo's brother plenty of times. In today's podcast, as we have asked on Twitter, we are going to take your scrambled questions. We're going to go through those in just a minute, but we're going to begin with our lead story. And of course, you all know by now, Todd Mayo has left the program, really coming late. He's coming in late July. Now we're in early August as we're recording this, Phil. And definitely comes as a surprise, at least to me. The fact that he'd lasted into July, I had kind of assumed he was in good enough standings to play this year, but he is apparently going to pursue pro opportunities is the story that we're going with.
Yeah, the whole thing is pretty weird. I'm not really sure what to make of it. The fact that it's this late, like you said, and the fact that he's going pro, you would have thought he would have gone, would have done that prior during, so he could have gone through mini camp and the NBA draft camps and all that stuff. So, it's hard to say. I'm sure there's rumor and innuendo what the real reasons are, but he's decided that he wants to go make money, which I can't necessarily fault him for. But
no, I don't think he's going to get what Emmanuel Mudiay is getting in China. That top prospect who was going to SMU, who's going to get $1.2 million to play in China. But the one reason I say that's the story we're going with is the way you said, Phil. Why didn't he declare back in May? And Jeff Goodman had an interesting tweet when the news broke. He said Todd Mayo had zero chance of ever playing for Wojciechowski. None. Was never going to happen. So apparently he knew something that we didn't, that this was coming. But and that's my question is, if this was coming, why didn't it happen earlier? And like you said, he could have gone to draft camps, even though he wasn't going to get drafted.
Right.
But at least he could have maybe tried to catch on with a summer league team, get some feedback from NBA teams. Now he's basically going to scramble and take the first European or Chinese or whatever team that's going to take him.
Yeah, well, that's the weirdest part for the whole thing, that Goodman was so convinced and so certain it was kind of done dealish that Mayo wasn't going to play for Wojciechowski. So what took so long? Why wasn't this able to be decided sooner? For Mayo's sake, did Mayo know what? I don't know. The timing just seems goofy to me.
Tumultuous run for Todd Mayo,
yes,
to say the least. On the court and off, he's had his suspensions, whether the half season due to academic issues, and Buzz Williams had to suspend him multiple times, for one game or half a game, for other off-the-court issues that were never actually specified. But he had his off-the-court issues, and he had his on-the-court roller coaster games, of course, with some games where he looked like an NBA player and some games where he would, shoot you into a grave. So,
right.
He had his ups and downs. I would have rather had him than not this year, considering Marquette's depth, but now his career's over.
Right. And we wish nothing but the best for him, obviously, but there's just a lot of confusion. And quite frankly, I'm starting to think our podcast is cursed because, it feels like every other month something negative is going on that sends up the podcast signal. And Mayo's just yet another in a long string of those things. So
I don't know if we're cursed. Maybe it's just Marquette basketball.
Yeah,
it's
been a rough 18 months, I feel.
Yeah, it really has been. But, with the Mayo news breaking, we had been asking for your scrambled questions, as we call it here on the show. And, of course, when the Mayo news broke, we had, as you would imagine, a lot of questions about Mayo and where the team goes from here. So we're going to kind of just naturally transition into some of the Mayo-related questions. The first one we're going to take, came from Twitter from Grant Becker, who asked, who benefits most from Mayo going pro, Swaggy Doo or Trey J? That's Dwayne Wilson or Duwan Johnson, for those who aren't hip to the nicknames. I say who benefits most from Mayo going pro, I would say Marquette's opponents first, Phil.
Well, it's a fair point. It's a fair point.
Because the depth hurts, and, for all his ups and downs, Mayo, I wanted his talent out there, and I was optimistic that maybe we would see some maturity from a 23-year-old senior out there, that he would, be able to bring along some of those young guys, and we would see more of the good Todd Mayo than the bad. But to answer Grant's question, I would guess both of those guys, but I really think Juwan Johnson would probably benefit the most because he'd been buried on the depth chart last year, and now that two-guard spot is wide open for minutes. So Juwan Johnson is going to get every opportunity he needs to prove that he is a major Division I player.
Yeah, I think I'm going to take a slightly different tact, and not just because this is, you know, this is podcasting and we have to have differing opinions to make a show worthwhile, but I actually think it gives advantage to someone like Sandy Cohen, because I think Mayo in you know, we were going to play a lot of 3 and 4 guard sets, and I think Mayo actually would have been playing closer to a 3 than a 2. You know, Trey J was going to get a lot of minutes at the 2 anyway, I think. Yeah. So I think Sandy Cohen's going to get some playing time that he might not have expected. And I think that it's going to hurt early, because I don't know that he's necessarily ready. I mean, you know, he's a freshman. We can't expect a lot from him. But overall, I think it's just going to give a lot of playing time to a lot of the guards. I mean, Derek Wilson's going to get more minutes as a result of this.
Yeah, of course, we were under the assumption, we don't know for sure, that Derek Wilson's minutes were going to go down with Wojciechowski changing things up. But who knows? Maybe Derek Wilson might be the best guard on the team. You don't know if he shows up with a jump shot this year.
It's going to be a long season if that's the case.
Well, we don't know.
Right.
But, you know, unless I'm miscounting, Marquette only has 8 eligible players for the first semester now.
I believe that's correct, yes.
Because with Mayo gone and Luke Fisher won't be able to play until the end of December. So with only 8 guys doing some communications major level math here, that means there are only 3 guys on the bench?
No, so, we have 9. Dwayne Wilson, John Dawson, Sandy Cohen, Juan Anderson, Derek Wilson, Matt Carlino, Juwan Johnson, Steve Taylor Jr., and Devontae Burton.
Okay, so 9.
9.
So 9, and then still, only 4 guys on the bench.
Right. I didn't want to step on your point there, but you were wrong.
But yeah, no, math is important.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is there are only going to be 4 guys on that bench. So if Marquette gets in a situation where there's injuries or there's foul trouble, you know, it's going to get really messy there. So I think any guy who can play will be given every opportunity to this year. So, yeah, I think a guy like Sandy Cohen, yeah, he's going to have his opportunity to find a spot in that rotation, because there's just not many minutes. I mean, there's just so many minutes to go around now with Mayo going on. Out, because I would assume, based on talent, Mayo would have played at least 20 minutes a game. At least.
I would have thought he would have gone to darn near 30. But, well, you bring up the injury point. I mean, has Marquette gone a season without a player in a walking boot? I think it's pretty inevitable.
I think the only season where Marquette really had no injuries, like significant injuries, was the year they went to the Elite Eight. I think that season, the only injury of note, like Vander Blue sprained a knee like early on and missed a game, like one game against Maryland Baltimore County.
Right.
I think that was it for injuries the entire season.
Yeah, and he could have played, but they said it's Maryland Baltimore County. We're not gonna risk it.
Right.
Yeah, so I mean, there's not going to be a lot there, which kind of segues into another scrambled questions from Michael Gilbert related to Mayo, but the question is, who steps up offensively now that Todd Mayo has left Marquette?
Honestly, I think the guy who needs to step up offensively is Derek Wilson. I think he needs to bring some sort of offensive game this year that he did not bring last year. And you know, apparently from what we see from Twitter is that, you know, Wojciechowski is really stressing shooting and their, you know, skills a little bit more than just, you know, athleticism than was the case with boot camp and stuff in the past. I think a guy who needs to step up is Derek Wilson. I think he needs to bring more than just his defense night in and night out, because I think with Marquette's thin bench now, he's going to play a lot. I think everybody's going to play a lot, and him being a senior, I think he's the guy that needs to step up with Mayo gone. He needs to at least bring some type of offensive threat. You know, for what it's worth, he has made a few 3-pointers in the pro-am, but who knows? You know, who knows how to judge that thing? It's, you know, it's like a pickup game. But
right,
I would like to see more offense from Derek Wilson this year.
I mean, I'd love to see it, but I have to freely admit, as much as I was, if someone goes back and listens to the tape, I thought that Derek Wilson was going to be a double digit scorer at the beginning of last season. And well, it just goes to show you that even incompetent people can get jobs with podcasts.
Yep.
But you know, just to kind of prove the point that I was a big supporter, I don't see it from Derek. I've kind of written him off as he is what he is.
I wouldn't bet a dime on it happening. I just think it needs to happen for Marquette to be good.
Right, right. For Marquette to have any chance, that would really be beneficial. I actually think who needs to step up is going to be Steve Taylor Jr. You know, and maybe that sounds a little harsh, you know, especially given how unfair it was, the fact that he was dealing with an injury last year and, you know, and apparently was in Buzz's, doghouse or whatever. But I think Steve Taylor, especially until Luke Fisher's come back, is going to have to hold down the center position, and he's going to have to rebound and score some buckets like he seemed to do his freshman year. He needs to get some of that back, and if they don't do that, there's just not going to be enough production and points to go around for Marquette to be successful.
Right. Marquette is going to be so small. As we said in the last podcast, actually, Phil, they have to be able to shoot the ball better than they did last year. There just aren't going to be any points from anyone.
Right.
So, to answer the question from Michael, everyone needs to step up. It can't just be one guy. Everybody needs to score more, and they need to be better shooters. And there needs to be more guys who are willing to take the big shot late in the game. Because, you know, for all his flaws, Mayo was a guy who did hit some big shots late in games last year for Marquette. So, you know, with the game on the line this year, who are you going to? And maybe that's Burton, maybe that's Dwayne Wilson. I guess that remains to be seen.
Well, and, you know, what's interesting, and it just popped into my head, is we're talking about this. With Mayo gone, we don't have a single starter left on the team. Yeah, Burton started a couple of games, but presuming Derek Wilson is not the starting point guard and somebody like Matt Carlino is, we don't have a single starter left on this team.
Yeah. I mean, Derek Wilson's left, but yeah, I know what you're saying. The opening night starting five will be completely different from last year's opening night starting
right.
five, very likely. And, well, I guess we'll see. I mean, Wojciechowski does have a lot of work to do to put together a lineup that he likes and find a way to win games. I think it's going to be really, really tough with only nine guys and a lot of them inexperienced. But that actually leads to our next scramble question. This came from Nick Bayer, or Bayer, however you pronounce it. Nick on Twitter, he asked probably the question that I think a lot of Marquette fans are wondering right now, considering the thin roster: what are the chances of adding another player this late in the offseason? I would say almost zero.
Yeah.
Payne Touches, it tweeted this the other day, that Wojciechowski seems content with the current roster. And, you know, I just don't think you want to add a guy just for the sake of adding a guy, especially like a freshman who, you know, you haven't even recruited up until this point. Just give a last-minute call, say, hey, you want to come on in? And if a freshman's worth anything, he probably would have had offers and gone somewhere else by now anyway. I was scanning Jeff Goodman puts together a list of transfers on ESPN.com and, you know, where they're going, and I just kind of scanned it to see if anyone is left. And of course, you don't want a transfer who's going to sit out this year, because that doesn't help. I was looking to see if there was anyone who has graduated and would be eligible right away. And yeah, there's like three or four on there, but they're all guys who averaged, you know, 2 points per game or less for a team in a one-bid league.
Right.
So I don't think these are guys who would necessarily add anything. But, you know, I guess the flip side of it, Phil, what could it hurt if it's a, you know, a 6'9 guy who, you know, granted he only scored 1 point per game, but he's only going to be with you for a year and then he's gone, and then the scholarship that you had maybe planned on being open in 2015 is still open.
Well,
I wouldn't see the harm of adding a guy like that, but the big picture, I say most likely, I would say 90% chance Marquette adds no one else to the roster.
Yeah, I think it's 99.9% certain they don't add anyone for two reasons. One, you know, what talent are you bringing in? Is it really worth the talent? And two, to your point, unless it's a one-year-only transfer, there's no reason to bring someone in now, because you're going to, in theory, unless you're going to go some route where you offer them a scholarship, and then when you're quote-unquote done with them after a year, you cut them loose, which I
right.
think a lot of fans would have some ethical issues with. Unless
yeah.
you're talking about a one-year transfer, and part of me says, you know, let's play with the team we got. Get the guys experience. I want the team to win, obviously, but if nothing else, I'm willing, with the talent we have on the team and the talent theoretically coming back next year or coming in next year as recruits, I'd rather see the players we have now get as much time as possible and kind of take this year in hopes of really doing some things next year.
Yeah, I think you just got to look at this year as more of a transitional year and just get some of these guys like Johnson and Dwayne Wilson and Deontay Burton a lot of playing time and Dawson and develop them for next year when Marquette can hopefully turn the corner a little bit. One point I will want to make, what you were saying about bringing in a freshman and then cutting him loose after a year. Yeah, I mean, on the surface, yeah, it's cold-hearted, and I think you don't want to do that to a kid. But, you know, recruiting isn't always so black and white, and there are different layers to it. And sometimes, you know, a coach may say to a kid, like, just be totally honest with him, look, I've got a spot for you this year. I don't have a spot for you next year. If you want to play for me for 1 year, you can try to earn your spot. And if it doesn't work out, I'll try to find you a place for next year. Because, you know, coaches talk all the time.
Right.
You know, Buzz Williams was talking last year when he talked about the transfer thing. He had a really good radio show with Homer. He was talking about, you know, how coaches call him all the time. Hey, I got a kid. He needs a place to play. Can you get him in? And he's like, no, I can't get him in. So, you know, theoretically, yeah, if there's a freshman out there who Wojo isn't that high on, but he will say, look, I've got a spot this year. I don't have a spot next year. Would you be interested? And then maybe I could find you somewhere else next year. That's a possibility. Again, this is a 1% chance. Overall, I would expect that Marquette is going forward with the current roster. But I just wanted to make a point on that recruiting can work that way sometimes. It can be a little complicated.
Yeah. I guess I agree. It can work that way. I just don't see any benefit to it.
Yeah. I do see a benefit if a guy can play a little, but if he's just taken up a roster spot and he plays absolutely not at all, and he doesn't have the academics and it could bring down your team that way, there's no reason to bring him in. So, and if there's off-the-court issues as well, you have to be aware of that as well. So you don't just bring in a guy just to bring in a guy. But if you think he can help this year, you consider it. But I just don't think – I'm just not sure there's that guy out there. So to answer Nick's question, I think this is the roster Marquette is going into the season with.
Yep, I agree.
You had one more question, kind of Mayo-related, kind of stepping up just before we close the Mayo Q&A for this podcast.
Yeah, let me see. I'm trying to remember which one that was. It was
one from Marquette Nation.
Yes, thank you. I found it here. The pros and cons in Mayo's departure. Would you rather have him on or off the team this year, considering on-off court implications? And by the way, Marquette Nation's avatar is outstanding with a picture of Burton with the Bane mask on.
Yeah, and it was before that. It was Wojciechowski's old Sports Illustrated picture when he was at Duke.
Yes.
But to answer Mub Nation or Marquette Nation's question, I kind of like touched on that earlier. Yes, I would rather have Mayo. For all his flaws, I would rather have an experienced guard on the team this year. And, you know, if he gets out of line, yeah, then you suspend him, cut him, whatever you do. But, you know, he's done that plenty of times. Yeah, he's had his off-the-court issues, and they have been frustrating. And his on-the-court inconsistencies were also frustrating. But I think the highs can be worth some of the lows sometimes. And I would rather have that talent on the team than not. But, I mean, no sense in crying about it now because he's gone.
Right. Well, I would take, and again, not just because it makes for good pod, I would take the opposite approach simply from the standpoint of, again, it's a very young team. You kind of, Wojciechowski's in, wants to put in his system. You know, for all intents and purposes, Mayo and Buzz were tight. And you know, Mayo was here entirely because Buzz wanted him to stay here. And if Mayo couldn't kind of keep up with expectations in that environment, I don't know that he'd be successful under Wojciechowski. And not that I think Mayo would be a cancer, you know, necessarily. But, you know, when you're building a young team and you're trying to build them in your own team image and prepare for the next year, I don't know that he's worth the 1 year. I admit you're taking the long term view instead of the short term, because in the short term the team is certainly less likely to succeed in the short term this year without Mayo. I mean, he is a talent without doubt, but the question is, do you trade that short term loss for potentially a long term game in terms of increased playing time and better, you know, better team chemistry potentially for the next couple of years?
Ask me this question again after we've gotten a good long look at Juwan Johnson, Dwayne Wilson, John Dawson, and the senior Derek Wilson.
Right.
If they all exceed expectations, then farewell, Todd Mayo. We didn't need you anyway. But if it's a total mess in that backcourt, then I think we'll be saying, oh, we need Mayo back.
Yeah. Well, and it kind of dovetails with one of Marquette Nation's other questions. Could this non-con run possibly disappoint more than last year's outcome? If if Mayo turns out to be a piece we're missing, I mean, we could have an awful non-conference season, and then we'll all be begging for him back as opposed to looking forward.
I would say it wouldn't disappoint, because my expectations for this non-conference season are so much lower than last year's.
Oh,
the only way it would disappoint more than last year's would be if Marquette goes out and loses to some of those, also-rans that are supposed to be guaranteed wins. Like, that would be more disappointing. But I honestly, right now, I don't expect Marquette to win any significant game in the non-conference schedule. That's just my expectation going in right now.
Yep, I agree.
But let's get away from that depression, maybe shift gears onto some other scrambled questions. We're going to throw a bone out to Anonymous Eagle. We appreciate all the retweets from Anonymous Eagle. I think it's Brewtown Andy running that one. Making sure we got all the scrambled questions. So I figured it's only fair we answer one of his questions. And while this is a Marquette basketball podcast, we love the university as a whole, so... Anonymous Eagle's question is, do you think men's soccer, women's soccer, and volleyball can all repeat as Big East regular season and tourney champs? You know, Phil, last year, Marquette, I guess it's safe to say, had its best fall sports season ever, with those three teams all winning both regular season and conference tournament championships. My answer to the question, I would say no, just because it is tough to have that double championship from all three teams. Individually, I would say all three, yes. Men's soccer, can they do it? Yes. Women's soccer, can they do it? Yes. Volleyball, can they do it? Yes. But the odds of all three happening again, I would say, is a little slim.
Yeah, I think it's extremely unlikely. I think the least likely to repeat is probably the women's volleyball team, since they had a turnover in their coaching staff.
Ryan Tice comes in from Ohio, but he does bring back a lot of talent. But yeah, the coaching staff change maybe is a concern there. And I think women's soccer lost a lot of, did graduate a lot of seniors. So maybe they will, I still think they're going to be strong and should definitely be in the mix for the title. I think all three will be in the mix for titles again. I just think the odds of all three, just because, you know, especially because the conference tournament scenario, it's one and done. Anything can happen in those. So I think they're just a little bit unpredictable. But I think all three individually have a shot. I just think the odds of the trifecta, the double trifecta, I guess, would be, I think that would be hard to pull off again.
I think the seasons will be entertaining. They'll be competitive. I think the men's soccer team is probably the most likely to repeat the double.
I agree. I think they're the most likely to do it again. Yes.
Yeah. Even though I would have guaranteed it. They had a verbal commit from Andrea Novak. I'm going to mispronounce it, Novakovic. But he took a professional contract in England, so ended up not coming to Marquette. He would have been a huge grab for Marquette, and would have really made a difference, even as a freshman, I'm sure. But I think the men's team will do well, I think either way they'll be entertaining, and there'll be yet more things for the Marquette fan base to be excited about and go to. And you know, you really want to see Valley Fields and the Owl filled up for those teams, because they're going to be competitive.
Yeah, go out and support those teams, because they definitely appreciate it when they have big games. By the way, I hope the volleyball can maybe find a way to give away some Autumn is Coming t-shirts.
Yes.
I know they can't sell them because of stupid NCAA rules and stuff, but I think if they just give them away, I think it could work. So I love the Autumn Bailey, of course, Autumn is Coming, of course, the Game of Thrones reference, of course, Autumn being Autumn Bailey, who was the Freshman of the Year in the Big East last year. It's a meme on Twitter. If you've seen the photos, they're hilarious. So... Autumn is Coming, so I think the volleyball team will still be very good this year. I think all three of those teams will be good. So good question from Anonymous Eagle, who does a good job promoting not just the basketball teams, but all the sports at Marquette. So that was a good question. I enjoyed that one.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, this is a fun question, and I think this will be fun to break down a little bit. It comes from Dan, hold my breath on the pronunciation, Dan Machieski, who asked, which throwback uniform would each of you like to see brought back for a game? Now, if you were follow Marquette on Twitter, follow the Spirit Shop, they tweeted out a couple weeks ago, they're now selling throwback jerseys, and if you're one familiar with Marquette's history, or you have seen Danny Pudi's 15-minute short Untucked on ESPN, ESPN.com, the 30 for 30, yep. 30 Untucked series, that was a great short film. But of course, those jerseys that were featured in that film, six of Marquette's most classic all-time jerseys, you can now buy them at the Spirit Shop. They look awesome. If you're the jersey buying type, you like to wear Marquette throwback jerseys, they have basically any type of jersey you would like. Now, Marquette has not said that they are going to bring back these for any kind of game, but it is fun to just fantasized that maybe one day they would actually wear these throwback jerseys in one game. So, Phil, if you could pick one of those throwback jerseys to wear in a game, which one would you pick? And I will, because we are just, it's just hypothetical, we will forget the technicality that the Bumblebee and the Untucked jerseys would probably not be allowed by the NCAA. So if you could have any of the six, what would you like to see them wear?
Well, I would like to see the Untucked version. Again, yes, the NCAA won't allow it. But, I mean, those are just so uniquely Marquette. Honestly, if the NCAA allowed it, I could honestly see some non-Marquette fans picking them up as you know, kind of uniforms that were cool and hip, as the kids say. That those would kind of catch fire around the country. But you know, obviously, it's not one that's going to work.
No, it's, for those not familiar, the Untucked jerseys, of course, are the ones they wore when they won the national championship in 1977.
Well, and there's the other reason for it, too.
That's the big reason
to
wear
mention.
It, of course. Now, the ones, like, I would love to see the Bumblebee jerseys, just to see what they would look like on television. Maybe if you made the numbers big enough, they could be worn, because that's why they were outlawed in the beginning, because I guess the referees complained that they couldn't read the numbers. But the Bumblebee jerseys were worn early 70s, 1969 to 72, before the NCAA struck them down. I would love to see those. But if they were not allowed to wear those, I would like to see the uniform that George Thompson wore,
right,
which was late 60s, early 70s. It's if you haven't seen it, it's a white jersey and it's got a blue and gold stripe down one side, not the other. So the left side of the jersey is clean, and then on one side there's a blue and gold stripe, and then the number is gold, and there's a blue circle around the number. That I think would look really good. It would like an updated jersey, a modern jersey with obviously I don't think any of the players would want to wear those short shorts. So we have to get them some baggy shorts to wear. But I think those would look really, really good to bring back for one home game, and I think the fans would just absolutely love it.
Oh, absolutely. That was going to be my second choice, actually. So you're kind of reading my mind. Plus, I think Marquette did a T-shirt giveaway with a replica of the George Thompson.
They did, and I still have it. The shirt is a little ratty. Now it's a little beat up, but I still do have that shirt. When they gave those out, I think they honored George Thompson one night, and they gave those out. So yeah, I really like that jersey.
Yeah, so those would be the two I would take. The ones they won the national championship, the Untucked ones, and then the George Thompson era. Those are just the two most, to me, the most classic. The Bumblebees, we kind of already honor the Bumblebees with our current uniforms, with the kind of the piping and the shorts and those.
Yeah. I mean, like that's the reason I didn't go with the one of the more popular. I think one of a lot of the fans like, it's the one they wore in the early 70s, the powder blue with the checkerboard on the side.
Right.
Because that's basically has inspired the current jerseys. That's the one that's really inspired the current jerseys. The one, it's a 1971 to 74. It's the road jersey, powder blue. And it really, if you look at that jersey and the current powder blue jerseys, it's very similar. So that's if they wore that as a throwback, it would still be cool, but it would just be just a slight variation from what they wore now. I just think the George Thompson Air jerseys would be such a variation from what they wear every day.
Right.
I think those would be very popular. So if Marquette's going to do it, and I would suggest they do, because that would maybe be something to get people talking on a year when Marquette may not get very many wins, just go like a week or two and just wear like a different throwback every day. For like three or four games, I think that would just get a lot of people talking. I think it'd be fun.
I agree.
Yeah, bust out each one for each game of the Orlando Classic.
Ooh, actually, that's kind of an interesting idea. Or
plus the Orlando Classic is on ESPN, and they would tease the 30 for 30 short. I think it would all work very well together.
Yeah, why not? I mean, we should maybe get paid for our marketing ideas.
I would not be against it. I would not hate that.
No, I wouldn't turn it down either.
Yeah, so those are the jerseys I would vote for. Good question from Dan on Twitter, though. But I think a lot of people were talking about those jerseys, and yeah, they look pretty sweet. If I had just a little more money to burn, I would like buy all six and just like line like a room in my house with them.
I was going to say, if you're going to buy them and wear them, then you're not like a normal adult male.
No, and when me being the skinny, pasty white guy, I just don't look good in a jersey.
It's not a good look.
It's not a good look for a skinny white guy. So, but hanging on a wall, I think they'd look awesome.
Yeah.
So, I think it's very cool that the Spirit Shop did bring those back, and I hope they're selling well because they look really cool. But I think we're ready for one more scramble question before we get out of here, Phil.
Yes, I think so.
This actually came from ourselves.
Crack Sidewalks.
It's either Tim or Rob. I don't know who was running the Crack Sidewalks Twitter at the time. But I think it's a good question that we could actually talk about for a little bit. The question was, what are reasonable expectations for the team this year? What's unreasonable? And I think that's very fair given Mayo's departure and the long-talked-about concern of the depth on this year's team. What's reasonable? What's unreasonable? Now, I think the expectations, Phil, that kind of I'm going to lay out are definitely not what Wojciechowski is going to be saying to his team. He should, of course, go and say all the right things. Guys, we want to win as many games. We want to win every game we possibly can. We want to make the tournament. We want to make a run at a Big East championship.
Right.
That's, of course, what he should be saying because he's the coach and he wants to win and he's a competitor, and that's great. What I am saying is trying to just be
You're trying
unbiased.
To soften the blow for the fans.
Yeah. Like unbiased, yet of course Marquette biased, but reasonably, honestly, I think reasonable is to shoot for 500. Honestly, with this team, I really think that's about as good as this team can do with the talent they have, with the schedule they have, and with the depth and the lack of depth. I just don't think there's that much there. I really think they're going to get pounded in the non-conference. Having Luke Fisher back for Big East play will be a nice little boost. Now, Luke Fisher is a good player, and he's going to help a lot in the middle because I think Steve Taylor is going to be so happy when he arrives or when he can finally take the floor. But Luke Fisher is not like an NBA talent who is going to make an instant impact and just totally turn a bubble team into a Sweet 16 team. He's not going to make that type of impact. I think maybe he'll make just enough to maybe get them in around 500 and maybe talking about getting in the mix for an NIT or some other postseason kind of tournament. But I think reasonable expectations from the fans' perspective is to go 500.
Yeah, I maybe I'm being a little more pessimistic. I think the ceiling for this team, from a reasonable standpoint, is to sneak into an at-large bid, like a 12 seed or a 13 seed at large bid. I think that's the best.
You're talking about the absolute best.
Best this team can do. And from there, I honestly think on the low side, again, if we're being reasonable, I kind of put reason in boundaries. What's the best and what's the worst? And the worst case scenario, I think, is potentially, you know, 10 or 11 wins. I mean, it could be I would be devastated, but I would not be surprised to see us, you know, go under 500 in conference and get pretty beat up in the non-conference schedule. I mean, yeah, we got some cupcakes there, but Arizona State, Ohio State, you know, the tournament down in Orlando. I mean, we could be playing some good teams, and
right.
We'll struggle. I don't think there's any, and it's not necessarily a reflection on Wojciechowski. It's a reflection of what the roster looks like right now.
To be clear, I'm not bashing Wojo here. I think Wojo's a good coach, and he's doing a great job on the recruiting trail. And I think the 15-16 season is where I think the team will turn a corner, especially if he can get some of the targets that he's still chasing right now. We talked about Henry Ellenson a lot in the last podcast. We'll see if that happens. But the roster is so thin and the schedule is so tough. I definitely think they're going to be below 500 when they get Fisher back.
Right.
I think when they get Fisher eligible. If you want to play the optimistic card, let's try to be like a little optimistic. Let's say maybe they hang around 500 and maybe they're like right at 500. Maybe they steal a win somewhere and they're right at 500 when Fisher gets back. Maybe getting him back, they could play themselves to be a top 4 or 5 team in the Big East. Then I think if you can be a top 4 or 5 team in the Big East with Fisher, then maybe the committee would look and say, okay, well, this is what they are with him, and the non-conference schedule we can forgive a little bit because they didn't have him. They're going to have him in the tournament. Maybe we can look at him. And that's being really optimistic.
Right.
You know, of course, you know, another positive look at, maybe you get a breakthrough season from a guy like Dwayne Wilson or Juwan Johnson. That could be a thing that would greatly change my opinion of this team. But, you know, basically, like I said in the last podcast, Phil, I look at this team right now and I say, all right, we're taking last year's team, which was disappointing. We take away every post presence they had, and we take away Jake Thomas, who was the only shooter they had. We replace him with Matt Carlino. and then you take away the best athlete in Jameel Wilson, and that's this year's team, and you replace him with Dwayne Wilson. So last year's disappointing team minus every post presence, and you're hoping that the guys who did not get to play very much last year have breakthroughs enough to make up for that. I just think that's asking a lot.
Right. And I think from an expectation standpoint, you know, I guess this season, unlike other seasons, and maybe you could make the argument that I'm either, you know, not being optimistic enough or I'm not, you know, I'm not really caring. But, you know, the wins and losses aren't going to impact me nearly as much as how well the team plays or the style they play,
right,
or how they look on the court. I mean, if they lost every game, but they lost every single game by a point or two and were extremely competitive in all those games, yeah, I'm going to be crying myself to sleep a lot of nights, but I at least can see the silver lining. So,
right.
So I really want to see my expectations for this team that I think are reasonable are be competitive in the games, prove that Wojciechowski is a game coach. He can make decisions in game, knows how to use timeouts, you know, can draw plays out of dead ball situations, you know, kind of in-game coaching. Let's prove we have that. There's enough talent there that I think they're going to win some games that we maybe might not expect late in the season. You know, and it's going to come down. We don't know what the Big East looks like, really. I mean, we know Creighton's probably in a similar boat. They had, you know, Coach McDermott's run out of kids he can recruit, or his own children he can recruit to his team. So, you know, Creighton's going to be in a flux. Some other teams are going to be in a lot of change. DePaul's always DePaul. I mean, it's really going to be a question of how the Big East is. I just think reasonable expectations are 500 or a couple of games under. I just think that's what we have to accept.
Right. Yeah. And Marquette is honestly a couple injuries, you know, an injury or two, a suspension or two away from, you know, battling DePaul for ninth. They're going to be right there if the season goes, you know, in a poor fashion, because I mean they're right there now. Like I said a second ago, if some of those guys who didn't get to play last year really turn a corner and really prove something, then yeah, maybe we could get excited about Big East play and try to finish in the top five, and then we'll just see where the chips fall when it comes to the tournament or the NIT, whatever we're shooting for at that time.
Right. But, I really think, you know, kind of the way I frame this, the high end and the low end is, you know, the high end is what ended up happening with Lazar Hayward's senior season, where we were all convinced we were done before the season started, and they had a heck of a year. And the low side, it's going to be what happened the year Travis Diener decided to take on a tackling dummy.
Allegedly.
There's no proof of that.
Just with the blog, with the
interwebs
say,
yeah. But you know what, it'd be like having a full season with Travis Diener injured. That's yeah. I think the low end. So
yeah, that is definitely the low end. That's a good comparison. Just a team with no leader, with no offense. Yeah, that would be tough.
You know, so I think one or two injuries, especially if they're a key injury, and you could get below, you know, you could even get to the point where you're looking at single-digit wins. Does that necessarily reflect on the program? It just kind of shows that things can, you know, if things don't go your way continually, you can really end up in a bad position real fast.
Yeah, and even if it is a disastrous season where Marquette only gets, you know, 12, 13 wins or something like that, if Wojo can just keep recruiting and just keep these guys that he has, you know, he's got Niskoviak and Matt Helt verbally committed. They're probably going to sign in November, so that'll be good to have them. Apparently, Helt is having a really, really good AAU season, so they may have really gotten a steal and been good to get on him when they did and get a commitment. And we'll see how he does. You know, we talked in the last podcast about Ellenson. We'll see if you know, Henry Ellenson does commit to Marquette. You know, the longer it goes without him committing, the more I think, well, it's wide open with him. Because, you know, when it happened, when his brother Wally committed, of course, he's transferring, he's sitting out, we're thinking, well, maybe any day now Henry will make an announcement. But he hasn't even cut down his list to a top five or six. So, and, you know, I don't know if Wojciechowski's still chasing Diamond Stone or not, but there's plenty of big fish out there that he's after. I saw today that a kid named Terrence Mann, who's a top 100, and it's a great Field of Dreams reference too, mm-hmm. but he's a top 100 kid. He cut his list to six, and Marquette's on it. and there's a kid, I'm not sure how to say it. I think it's Hanif Cheatham. He's another top 100 kid. Marquette's in his final six. So Wojcicki is really killing it on the recruiting trail. So he just has to keep recruiting, and I think he just wants to keep this team together and develop those young guys that we've talked about, the guys who are going to be sophomores this year, who are going to be so key to whether or not Wojcicki really gets rolling at Marquette. Those are the guys that I think I'm going to be paying the most attention to this year. You know, with all respect to the seniors and everything, I think it's that sophomore class that I think everyone is really going to be watching to see, all right, can these guys turn a corner and can they make this team better and really prepare to make a nice run next year when they're juniors? Those are the guys I'm watching this year.
Right, exactly. That's kind of where I am at. Maybe, you know, again, I'm not giving up on the season, but I kind of look at it as this year is my expectations are it's a developmental year to get the youth up to speed and know what's going on so that we can be prepared next year and the following year to really, really take the league by storm.
Yeah, I guess that's the up and yeah, that's the way we're looking at it. So. Obviously we seem to talk like we're really, really down on this team, and maybe we are, but I mean, we're still watching. We still love the team. We wouldn't do the podcast if we didn't love the team.
Right.
And we're going to watch, and we hope they prove us wrong and they go out and win a Big East title and really get this team excited. And if this team gets to the tournament, let's make room on Wojciechowski's mantle for a Coach of the Year award, because I think he'll deserve it.
Yeah.
Hopefully he does. And I love Wojciechowski's attitude. And we'll see, and you know, we're going to see how well he does. I like what I've seen so far from him as far as recruiting. What you know, all the media appearances he's done, whether it's on radio or in magazines or you know, being on television and promoting the program and talking about his vision for the program, and he's doing it the right way. And I will never know exactly what happened with Todd Mayo, if this was a Wojcicki decision or if this was Mayo's decision, but you know, maybe it may be for the best as far as the overall atmosphere of the program that Mayo will not be a part of the 14-15 campaign, and I hope Wojcicki can make something of this team. And there is certainly talent there. I just not sure if it's going to be enough to make a big difference this year, but I hope they prove me wrong.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, you know, you go with the coach's decision. Mayo's not on the team. I'm not going to worry about it anymore. I'm not going to say woulda, coulda, shoulda. Let's see what the team. I think if nothing else, this team will be interesting to watch. It may not always be happy to watch them, but I think it'll be very interesting to watch.
Yeah, I just think we just need to be fair to this team as they go through the non-conference play and realize they're young, realize they're thin, realize they have a tough non-conference schedule, and they're going to be going up, especially when they go up against teams like, you know, if like Wisconsin or Arizona State, and if they face Michigan State or Kansas in that Orlando Classic, I mean, they're going to be going up against some really good teams. But I just preach patience with this team and trust in Wojcicki, and we'll see how far these guys, how far he takes us.
I know it's tough because that's what Twitter was invented for. But with this season, if we could keep the angst to a bit of a minimum, I think that would be best for everyone.
Well, we hope we have answered your scrambled questions to your satisfaction. We appreciate. We actually got a lot. A lot of them were very similar with regards to Mayo and what the team should do without him. We hope we've answered those. And if we haven't, you can just ask us on Twitter, and we'll answer them there. I am Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF23. Or you can also ask the Cracked Sidewalks Twitter handle as well. Of course, we do have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page where we post the blogs as well. Final thoughts, Phil?
No, let's just shelve the condiment jokes and move on and get ready for the season. It's now August, so we're a scant 2-3 months away.
Yeah, I don't know when we'll do another podcast, but I'm sure we'll do another one before the season tips off. We maybe even ask for more scrambled questions between now and then. But until our next podcast, seashells and balloons, everyone.